Welcome to this podcast from the Medical Journal of Australia. My name is Sam Hunt, the MJA's news and online editor. Today we are discussing new research into hospital utilisation in Australia, with a focus on use by people over 75 years of age. The research found that containing hospital costs by limiting bed availability and reducing length of stay may no longer be viable strategies. My two guests wrote about this in the Medical Journal of Australia. You can read their research by clicking the link in the podcast description. My two guests are with me now. Dr. Natasha Reed is a research fellow, and Professor Len Gray is a professor of geriatric medicine. Both are at the Centre for Health Services Research at the University of Queensland. Dr. Reed and Professor Gray, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Professor Gray, I'll start with you. Can you take me through the findings of your research?
Okay. Yeah. So in the period from 1993 to 2019, the proportion of the Australian population who are aged over 75 increased much more rapidly than the population in general. And since older people use hospitals at much higher rates than younger people, you'd expect that older patients would occupy an increasing proportion of the available hospital beds. However, this has not really occurred, somewhat surprisingly to many. This seems to have been made possible by significant reductions in the length of stay in hospital among older people. On the other hand, the length of stay for younger patients has virtually been unchanged over that 20 to 30 year period. Our interest in doing this research is whether into the future, particularly with the baby boom generation now entering the 75 plus age group, that this trend in reduction in length of stay can continue as a strategy to contain the demand for hospital beds and thus, in many people's minds, hospital costs. We believe that this is probably unlikely to be a sustainable strategy into the deep future. And that's a question for all of us to consider in thinking about how hospitals are organised and funded.
And that's a big concern, isn't it? Hospitals no longer being able to contain costs by limiting bed availability and reducing length of stay. Natasha, can you unpack these challenges for us?
The population is rapidly increasing in age. And there was a report released by the United Nations a few years ago that said that for the first time in human history, we have more people aged over 65 than there are under the age of five. And what we have is a situation where our lifestyles coupled with our sort of changing work practices are leading to more chronic diseases across the board. And when you put that together with decreasing mortality rates, we're getting a higher need for hospital usage. And ultimately, it can't continue, and hospitals will continue to be overwhelmed more so than they already are unless we deliver more innovative and different solutions.
And Natasha, let's talk about the solutions. What are some things happening internationally that could be adopted in Australia? What do we need to look at?
The UK and Canada are two international examples that we can draw from, as they already have these established networks and organisations designed to look at these sorts of problems for an ageing population or in relation to frailty. In the UK, for example, many hospitals have implemented specialised services for older people or those living with frailty, where they assess their health status when they come into an emergency department, for example, and deliver or establish a multidisciplinary plan that enables the older adult to meet their goals of care more effectively. So that means including things like a frailty front door service or having whole units dedicated to the medical care of older people. In Canada, they've taken a slightly different approach, a more population-based health approach, where they focus on maintaining the health of people as they age to reduce the need for hospital services in the future.
And Natasha, these challenges, the aging population, more people with chronic conditions, what's the importance of health promotion here, along with other strategies?
So we need to think about health as a system. So it's not primary, secondary or tertiary care working in silos, and it's really that integrated approach. So health promotion is necessary for people in sort of, or at any age, but mostly from middle age as they approach that a later stage of life. But it's also important for reablement. So if someone leaves hospital, we need to have services and supports in place to help them improve their health status or maintain their health status post a hospital stay. Some other important things for hospital administrators, I think we need to start thinking about aging or chronic disease or frailty as core business for everyone in the healthcare sector. So there needs to be an underlying level of knowledge and understanding about those topics. And on that note, we should be facilitating and enabling our staff to be educated on these types of questions.
And Len, I'll go to you as a professor of geriatric medicine. From your clinical experience, what are you seeing on the ground?
Just starting from the point of view of containing the number of beds and building systems to ensure that folks that where hospital could be avoided are kept out of hospital. What happens in the hospitals, of course, is that the complexity of the cases that ultimately arrive in hospital intensifies significantly. So we're seeing a much frailer population being in hospital. And of course, as soon as their recovery starts to emerge, they're out. So that the population of people that you see in a hospital have become very complex. It makes the workload intensive for all the staff. So even though we've contained the number of beds, the work in the hospital intensifies, and that's a huge challenge. And of course, the system has not adapted perfectly to the change in this population in hospitals, because you're seeing a much larger proportion of older people with complex needs, not just one disease. Maybe the disease that brought them in is being attended to, but there's lots of other comorbidities and functional and psychosocial consequences of their illnesses that have to be attended to in order to deliver the care effectively, and I might say efficiently. If you don't organise the care around the panoply of needs that these people have, it ends up being inefficient, and therefore waste occurs in the hospital. So we do have to re-engineer the way we deliver hospital care so that it's not only effective, but it's also efficient for older people. Big, important issue for hospitals, I believe.
Natasha, this comes back to your point about core business. From what you're seeing from studying the health system and the different systems in place in Australia, how far are we in terms of progressing this work as core business? Is there still a long way to go? Are some states ahead of others?
That's a great question. I think we have further to go than some of the other countries that I've spoken about, but there's definitely a rising tide. People are starting to realize that we do need to take care of people's underlying health status. And like Len said, not just the primary reason they came into hospital. It's actually being much more recognized within policy as well. So the different, both federally and locally, the notion of frailty is certainly coming through these policy documents, and us needing to recognize it and deliver different models of care for people who are frail. And that's one of the things that we have been, as a team, successful in getting funded to sort of establish an Australian frailty network that mimics some of the work happening in the UK and Canada, to, I guess, bring all the pockets of people around the country working on this together so we can share findings and elevate those policy changes and things that are working.
And Len, I want to talk to you about hospital funding. We've got the National Health Reform Agreement, of course, which seems to be much more focused on that primary and tertiary care rather than primary care. Where do you see the challenges here in terms of government funding? Because you're talking about a reframing of how we view the system.
You're probably alluding to the structural arrangements we have in Australia, where state governments have primary responsibility for hospital care, at least in the public sector, and the federal government has responsibilities for primary care and community care. And obviously, in thinking about what Tash has said about how we address this demand problem, the three things that come to my mind are doing things that will reduce demand for hospitalisation, that may be primary and secondary prevention strategies, focusing the care on thinking about designing a system for people with chronic problems who are frail, that's older people with multiple problems, and thinking about how to integrate the care. So the structural arrangements we have at the moment don't lend themselves particularly to funding an integrated model of care because of this division of responsibilities between governments. So I don't think that's going to change in the near future. We've had seen attempts to do that in the past that have failed. So we're going to have to live with this divided responsibility. So then what can be done in a systems or a structural sense to overcome the barriers? And we think here about things like record sharing, digital health solutions that enable the care to be virtually integrated rather than separated. So those kind of things, supporting models that bring primary care and community care staff together with hospital staff using digital strategies might be, you know, a really important thing to think about in terms of bringing some integration where you've got these structural barriers around the funding. So a lot of my work, I think Tash is thinking about this as well in her work, about how to overcome the structural barriers to get a much more integrated approach to care.
And Dr. Reid, is there anything you'd like to add?
Following on from what Len has just been talking about in terms of those structural changes, what we have noticed or what has been published in other literature is that you can design a great program or a great model of care, but if it's not supported by the right infrastructure or the right resourcing in terms of personnel, it won't actually lead to better health outcomes for people. And that's ultimately what we're after. If you're sort of listening and you're wondering what you can do next, I think it's important to recognize the importance of looking for alternative models of care, but also implementing an evaluation of those models of care and really understanding what's going to make, what's going to turn into better health outcomes for people.
Dr. Natasha Reid and Professor Len Gray, thank you so much for joining me today.
No problem. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Natasha Reid is a research fellow, and Professor Len Gray is a professor of geriatric medicine. Both are at the Centre for Health Services Research at the University of Queensland. You can read their research by clicking the link in the podcast description. You can also find more podcasts from the Medical Journal of Australia on our website at mja.com.au or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for joining me.